Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being until we ask for them, because we have with us this evening Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute, and Jerry does help support Radio Liberty and keep us bringing these programs to you. And we're going to be talking, I'm sure, about the avian influenza. We're going to be talking about preparation for problems if they do arise. We're going to be talking about a genetically modified food, because one of the big concerns to me is that so much of the food in America and the vast majority of many of our major crops, we're talking like soy and corn and things of that sort, are genetically modified, and they will not allow these into other countries. They will not allow this in Europe. They will not allow this in many other countries throughout the world, because they know the disastrous effect it has on it, the health of the American people, people. And here in the United States, why, you're not even allowed to say this is not genetically modified. And the scientific studies, well, a lot of these are really very, very frightening. And we'll get into some of that later on. But right now, Jerry Guidetti, how are you tonight, this evening?
Doing.
Okay, fine. Well, what are we going to start this evening?
Well, I'll tell you, I got a piece of good news for a change.
All right, fine.
In my mailbox, and I thought you would really get a kick out of this. You know, when I started the ARC Institute, it was 1995. My concept was create a Noah's Ark for seed. I was very concerned about the disappearing natural seed, the heirlooms, the non-hybrids, non-GMO, and so on. And they were disappearing at massively increasing, accelerating rates of speed. And now we're down to so little biodiversity compared to what we had years ago, and unfortunately this is not good for the human race, especially when we are facing things such as catastrophic pandemics or nuclear war and so on. So having said that, into my email pops an article, Deep Inside an Arctic Mountain, the Noah's Ark of Seeds that Will Survive a Catastrophe. The future of humanity may soon rest deep in a frozen mountain on a remote Norwegian island. The Norwegian government plans to build a doomsday vault to house 2 million seeds, which will represent the entire agricultural diversity of the planet. The idea is to safeguard the world's food supply against threats such as nuclear war, asteroid impact, terror attack, climate change, and rising sea levels. It's a Noah's Ark for seeds, says Carrie Fowler, Executive Director, Global Crop Diversity Trust, who carried out a feasibility study, et cetera. Now, they basically have a vault that's going to measure 5 meters, approximately 5 yards, by 5 meters by 15 meters, and it's going to be cut from solid rock in the side of a mountain, and it should be finished by September of 2007. The government of Norway is putting up the money. They'll own the facility. Technically, not the seeds inside. The seeds are a gift to humanity, and they're going to be cooled down to between minus 10 Celsius to minus 20 Celsius. But if the cooling system fails, they figure the permafrost around it is going to keep it at approximately minus 4 C. So basically what you have is what the ARC Institute has been doing since 1995, teaching people to freeze their seeds and store them for humanity.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Jerry Guidetti. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. And Jerry is talking about something the Norwegian government is doing, and that is that they're going to establish an area where they're going to keep seeds frozen for an indefinite period of time. In other words, some people in Norway are seeing what Jerry is seeing and what I'm seeing and concerned about, and that is that there is a conscious, organized effort to adulterate the seeds that have been here, you know, since mankind has been here. And, you know, certainly by genetically modifying them, we don't know what the impact of this is going to be. But at least there are people in Norway who want to preserve the seeds for posterity and for future generations. I think that's really rather exciting. I wonder if they know something that the average person doesn't know.
Well, I'll tell you, it's always a difficult thing for me to talk about, or at least difficult for people who are listening, to talk about coming catastrophes, which I see as a biologist. I see all of these catastrophes potentially impacting the global food supply, starving out the human race. I mean, that is my entire focus as a biologist, and so I have seen, you know, when the Y2K thing happened, I was very concerned because agriculture and modern agriculture is dependent almost 100% on computers and on all of the things that computers run, including oil and so on, you know. So this is modern agriculture. Well, now we have the influenza pandemic, which is a biological Y2K, if you will. It has the potential to literally kill directly massive numbers of people around the globe, and in doing so, disrupting commercial agriculture, the raising of all of these GM seeds and hybrid seeds that simply will not grow unless they have all of these people and all of this technology and all of the chemicals inputs, you know, in the production of food. And so when I see something like this, I say, yes, indeed, the message has gone out. People have begun to recognize it. Governments, especially in Europe, they have begun to recognize it, and they are now, here's Norway doing this really fabulous thing, which is so much better than our own government has. We have a national seed bank in Fort Collins, Colorado, which I visited when I was doing a doctorate out there years ago, and it was just this little tiny thing, which has now expanded somewhat, but it was only getting a budget, an annual budget of $32,000 a year. Now, that budget has grown some, and they have expanded some, but there is no way that that seed bank here in the United States has anywhere near the kind of stocks and long-term storage capabilities that we need in order to provide for the survival of the human race on the planet.
Hold that off right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was just saying that although the United States has a seed bank to preserve the seeds for posterity, when she visited that there at Fort Collins, Colorado, some years ago, their annual budget was about $30,000, $32,000.
Right.
It's probably gone up some, but since then. But you see, there are people who are thinking there may well be a world catastrophe. Well, if you believe in the Bible as I do, in Revelation 6:8, and I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by the sword and by hunger and by pestilence and by the beasts of this world. And, you know, they're talking about the death of a quarter of the population of the world. And then if you read on, why, you find out that things really get bad after that. The quarter of the population is just the very beginning of the terrible things that are going to befall the world. Is it possible that these things could really happen? And I would simply ask, as you look at the world today, can you give me any reason why God would not allow this to happen? So pick the story up there, Jerry.
Sure. Well, even, you know, out of all respect for people who are not believers, even if you were to look at it just as a scientist, and you look at the threats to mankind today, man himself, man, woman themselves, human race, there is bioterrorism, there is agrobioterrorism, attacking crops and so on. We have all of that technology for that already. Many of these things have already been weaponized by the United States as well as the former Soviet Union. They aren't supposed to be out there being used anymore, and we supposedly have stopped that research, but they are still there. Then we have massive weather changes that are occurring. We have all we have to do is look at Katrina and all of the other hurricanes and the loss of the change in the current that is sweeping up the east coast of the United States, going to Great Britain and so on. We have the potential of having quite a sudden mini ice age in that section of Europe, for example. So when you look at all of this, the sum total, and you look at the possibility of an asteroid hit, you have to ask the question, with a technological society creating seed literally, chemically, biochemically, using techniques of molecular biology, modifying the genes, modifying them with chemicals and the addition of antibiotic genes inside the seeds themselves and so on, how the heck is the average Joe or Jane left in some little remnant of some state somewhere in the United States? How are they supposed to grow food and begin again? How is it supposed to happen unless they have access to a vault such as this? Now, even the Norwegians plan, think about it, if we were hit by an asteroid, this vault encloses seed. It's going to presume that there are going to be survivors, that the survivors are going to find the vault, which is now in an Arctic region. That's where it's going to be put in. And then they would have to know what those are in there. But what a magnificent idea. We have been sending, and I know we have a lot of former customers or current customers out there listening to your program, Stan, and those folks will tell you that they've received a single sheet from us telling us how to preserve their seeds in the freezer for many, many years, how to dry them down and freeze them, and then just take out of the freezer what they need to grow each year's gardens and crops. And so here you have that same concept being used in a really noble way, and that is to build an absolute doomsday vault. And yes, I think you're right. I think countries are beginning to recognize that bad times indeed are possible, maybe even probable, and they're starting to think about the human race survival as a whole, which is what Norway is thinking of here. And I think folks ought to, be happy that somebody's thinking about that. But then I would encourage everybody to similarly think about that in terms of survival when you make your own choices about seed for your own families, about growing, and even to make the choice to have some on hand, because any of these catastrophes has the potential to greatly impact not only your own family and neighborhood, but actually the world.
And I think really one of the things that really bothers me, is the fact that, they had to create these genetically modified foods. For instance, they make some of the foods of Roundup Ready, some of the corn, things like that, soybeans. And so, they put the genes into the corn. But what does that do to human beings? And other instances when they put pesticides into the corn, and you notice now when you get your corn, there's no evidence that there are any caterpillars there. That's because they put something into the corn to kill the caterpillars. But what does it do to human beings? And of course, there are many studies, at least there's one Monsanto study that raises some very serious questions about what this does to human beings. There are no human being studies there now. They're experimenting on the human beings. They've had some animal studies, and there were dramatic changes, significant changes in those animal studies. And Monsanto says, there's nothing to worry about. We're just going to go ahead and do it. Do you really trust Monsanto? And I will tell you, quite frankly, after the way that they got NutraSweet in, knowing full well it produced pathological obesity and infertility and mental changes and cancer, can we really believe what they're going to tell us about their genetically modified crops? But the problem is that when they have these genetically modified crops, they pollinate, and they don't necessarily just stay in this one field they're being growing. They actually spread into adjacent fields and fields adjacent to the adjacent fields. They can really contaminate the crops of an entire nation, perhaps the entire world.
Right, and unfortunately, there is every intention to introduce the Terminator gene very shortly, as in this year. The Terminator gene is going to start getting introduced commercially. Everyone's fighting it. Europe, for example, has been fighting all genetically modified seeds, vehemently fighting any kind of genetically modified seeds, and yet we read in just this week, January 8th, an article came out in the online edition of The Independent in Great Britain that women who eat GM foods while pregnant risk endangering their unborn babies, startling new research suggests. And this was put out by a doctor by the Russian Academy of Sciences, She is one of the top scientists in the Russian Academy of Sciences. And she was so concerned about what she found that prior to its publication, it's coming out in about a month, the whole scientific report, and she actually published some of this information because it was so critical that women know this now. And this is, it's carried out by, again, leading scientists, Russian Academy of Sciences, found that more than half of the offspring of rats fed on modified soy died in the first 3 weeks of life, six times as many as those born to mothers with normal diets. Six times as many were also severely underweight. Now, it wasn't just them. It is Italian research found that modified soy affected the liver and the pancreas of mice. Australia had to abandon their attempts to modify peas when they were found to cause lung damages. You'll remember, Stan, I disclosed this on the air when it happened, and that was the rat study, a very limited study by Monsanto testing that modified corn. It was Mown Watt 683, I think the number of it was. That was Roundup Ready resistant corn at the time, and they actually published data saying that there were some kidney changes, some blood changes, and then they said, and by the way, they were only in the ones who ate the modified, genetically modified seed corn meal, and they said, but it was not related to the genetic event in the corn. It wasn't even related to it. The fact that it just happened to be in only the ones, the defects were only in the ones who ate the genetically modified, is kind of what you'd expect in a population of rats that size. Well, nothing could have been further from the truth. There were some independent studies done. People sounded the alarm, but as usual, they were just hushed up, and it was pushed through. And now we learn that despite the fact that Europe is up in arms over that, and I'm going to quote this directly, the World Trade Organization is expected next month, February, to support a bid by the Bush administration to force European countries to accept GM foods.
And, of course, you could say, well, you know, why would they do that? I mean, nobody would want to hurt people. And I would say are people who would want to hurt people. All you need to do is read the writings of people like Jacques Cousteau and Bertrand Russell and go to Alberton, Georgia, and see the Georgia Guidestones that talk about the fact that we should maintain humanity at 500 million, humanity at 500 million in constant balance with nature. They're telling you what they're going to do. And people say, I can't believe that. And I would say, why can't you believe that? Look at what's happening. Look at what's happening in the Middle East today. I mean, study the history of the last century and tell me there aren't evil and wicked people. The United States went to war in 1898, and people say, well, that was a long time ago. And we lost 5,000 men in the Spanish-American War. When was the last time you heard about the 200,000 Filipinos the American troops slaughtered in the Philippines because they didn't want to be liberated by the Americans? Between 200,000 and, some people say, as high as a million Filipinos were slaughtered between 1899 and about 1905. We were there to liberate them. And could you imagine? They were ungrateful little yellow men. They didn't want to be liberated. They wanted to be free. How could you suppress something like that? How could you suppress the fact that between 1958 and 1962, the Chinese starved to death between 41 and 43 million of their people? You want the documentation? We'll get it for you. You've never heard that. I wonder why. There really are evil people in the world. And I believe some of them are working in the food industry today. Well, Jerry, pick up the story there.
Yeah, and I also wanted to tell you that even more alarming in this recent study that is going to now come out of the Russian Institute of Sciences, a staggering 55.6% of those rats born to mothers on GM diet, the genetically modified diet, perished within 3 weeks of birth. Now, this is critical information because we're looking at a country here in the United States where genetically modified corn is a very large percentage now of the crops, of the corn crops born here in the United, grown here in the United States. And it is pervasive now in so many products. For example, corn syrup, sweetener, in all of your sodas and cakes and pastries and you name it. Children's Jell-O, for example, all of that corn sweetener, corn starch, all kinds of corn cereals, corn tacos, corn this, corn that. Now, that doesn't mean just to pick on corn. There are other grains that are also genetically modified, but corn is a real big one right now, and it's the one that is probably, oh, and soy. Soy is the other one. Very common in U.S. diet. We do so many things with soy now, soy oil, and soy powders and proteins to, you know, modified soy textured protein to make hamburger meat or high-protein fillers and foods. Well, if it's not genetically modified, non-GMO soy, it's one thing. But to use genetically modified when, in fact, we have no human studies, we have rat studies, which are considered to be very highly reliable as predictors of what you'd expect in a human population, now we're seeing that it actually causes such harm to unborn babies and prematurity. Now, the question in my mind is it possible that this has led to so much prematurity in infants? We have almost an epidemic of premature deliveries, and they're trying to figure out what are the factors. Well, some women tend toward anorexia. We know that if you don't eat well, you can have premature births. We know stress is one factor, but also we might have the interaction here of some of these chemicals that they're not used to taking in. All of these early births, these premature deliveries, these very low birth weight rats being born to mothers who are fed modified soy. And, you know, a lot of young girls are eating these energy bars and these high-protein bars to control their weight, and they all have soy in them. Question is it genetically modified soy? Is it genetically modified corn? Is this what's contributing? I haven't the foggiest idea because we don't have the studies.
And, of course, you're not allowed to know whether it's genetically modified
That's
or not.
Right.
And even more frightening than that, to me, Jerry, is there's new legislation that is being passed through Congress today that says that if you take a drug and it is harmful to you, you will not have the right to sue the manufacturer of that drug as long as the Federal Drug Administration had said it's safe. Now, the Federal Drug Administration, with no human studies, has said that genetically modified food is safe. So if they were to poison 100,000, a million, 10 million of our people, you would have no comeback on Monsanto or the other companies because, after all, the Food and Drug Administration said it's safe. You cannot sue them because that's the law of the land, and we actually are a nation of laws, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
And what people do not understand is the difference. Why are they so anxious to get this legislation through now? What do they know that the rest of us don't? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti, and I was just talking about the new legislation. You probably haven't heard about it, but it's covered in the last day or so in the Wall Street Journal. They're trying to get legislation through very quietly that if you take a drug that has been authorized by the Federal Drug Administration and it's harmful and it gives you serious injury or it kills you, you can't sue the drug manufacturer as long as the Federal Drug Administration said it's safe. Now, that's rather frightening because there are people in the Federal Drug Administration who really are, in my opinion, very wicked people who are either going to accept gifts or promises of a good job with the drug manufacturers when they leave the government service. Can we really trust the government to protect us and to protect our health? And I would like to suggest when we have one in six American children with a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality, when we have 1 in 6 children have asthma in the United States, and we never had this before, we have to ask, is there any possibility that the Federal Drug Administration is not doing a very good job? When we see an epidemic of pathological obesity, we know it's related, at least in part, to aspartame, because any animal you give aspartame to will become pathologically obese. And the government says it's perfectly safe. Can we really trust the government with our lives and the lives of our families? And I would like to suggest that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone, and that the FDA would have total power over you, and you would have no comeback at all, and the courts would simply be out of the perspective. I don't know. Have you run into that situation? Have you
seen yes. No, as a matter of fact, part of this legislation is coming about, too, because of the pandemic influenza and forming the vaccines, and the fact that there is going to be limited ability for anybody to sue. What they're trying to do is pump out an awful lot of product right now in order to get vaccines and antibodies, manufactured antibodies, up to speed fast enough that they hope we're going to have some kind of protection against the pandemic. But in the meantime, since this hasn't gone through phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 testing and so on, all of these different technologies, especially these DNA vaccines and so on, they have to protect, and that's what the pharmaceutical industry said in that meeting in the White House some time ago, maybe about 3 months ago. They were very concerned. They're saying, all right, you want us to build buildings, you want us to build laboratories, you want us to produce a vaccine not using the age-old technique of using eggs, because it is way, way too slow, and also prone to failure because the bird flu kills the chicken eggs, and so we have to really play with this to make it work and so on. So if you're going to tell us you want this, and you want it now, you want it yesterday, then you sure as heck had better protect us from litigation. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of like the Patriot Act. You open up this window for purportedly this good purpose, this humane purpose, and in reality, what it does, Stan, you know and I know, is it opens up the door for all kinds of abuses, for all kinds of shoddy products. They're already using some of these experimental things in places like Vietnam and in China, testing them out on massive numbers of people over there, because there isn't time and there isn't the will to do this. There hasn't been the will to do this the right way over these years because it's not profitable enough. And so profit is a big part of this game, and also this is a wonderful open window opportunity, like the Patriot Act, giving them an opportunity to wiretap U.S. citizens and so on, and to follow around the innocent for political reasons in order to supposedly say they're looking for terrorists here in the country. So there is, you're absolutely right, there is abuse of power in all things where there are people in power.
And, of course, I really think that, would you really want to take a vaccine made by a vaccine manufacturer that didn't have enough confidence in it? Their own vaccine would say, we won't actually produce this vaccine unless we can be sure we will not be sued. Well, why would you want to produce a vaccine that might lead to suits? I mean, what protection would the individual have? They would have absolutely no protection at all. And could this be used for another purpose? Those of you have never read the book Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy, let me suggest you get it and read it, Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy. You will never look at what the things we're talking about today in the same way after reading that book. And Tom Clancy is a very smart man. In the foreword to that book, he says, there is material in this book that the federal government doesn't want you to know. It's a fictional book, admittedly, based upon certainly what's going on in the world today. But what would there be in that book that the government wouldn't want you to know in a book of fiction? What if you get it and you read it? It's all about vaccine manufacturers. So we'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. And talking about, well, we're going to be talking about certainly seeds. We're going to be talking about the very real problems that face us today with genetically modified foods. And we actually carry a book by Jeffrey Smith on genetically modified foods. It's called Seeds of Treason. You really want to get it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. Jerry, go ahead.
Sure, Stan. So, at any rate, the good news, going back to good news, we do have good news that the Norwegian government, anyway, has decided to build a seed vault, literally a doomsday vault, to preserve what seed we do have of modern agriculture. Keep in mind, I often do seminars on this topic, have been doing them for years, and one of the points I tried to get people to understand is that the human race used to eat as many as 5,000 different kinds of food, and we used to have maybe thousands of different varieties of wild grains that mankind used to gather and grind on stone and eat and so on. And then as we got smarter, and I put that in quotes, as we got smarter, we began to breed these things so that you didn't have to gather as many seeds to make a cupful, for example, of grains and so on. And then we learned agriculture. We taught ourselves agriculture. And this all evolved. Well, as part of this evolution, unfortunately, we have begun to eliminate so many of these varieties from our diet, and in them, of course, for the cures to just about everything. You know, all of that diversity had all was all encoded for different kinds of great antioxidant chemicals and so on. For example, if you just take apples alone, in the 19th century, we had, that's 19th century, 1800s, we had 7,100 varieties of apples. Today, 6,800 of those are extinct. Do the math. That's only 300 varieties of apples left. And when you go to the grocery store, thankfully we're seeing more than just red and yellow delicious apples, because people have been complaining about boredom. So these little mini markets are bringing out some of these others, and Japanese have introduced a few, and you might see 5, maximum 10 available in your market if you're lucky. Keep in mind that a mere century ago, there were 7,100 varieties of apple. Now take that and multiply it times the kind of diversity you used to have in wheat and oats and corn and all of the other foods in God's creation. And what you have is, what I envision is this giant funnel. If 200 years ago, we were eating at the top of this big funnel, filled with many thousands of different kinds of foods. Over the years, due to our so-called smarts, we have now narrowed that down to the bottom of the funnel.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was simply pointing out that, you know, many years ago, why we had the thousands of different types of apples, now we're down to about 300, and the same thing is happening with all sorts of the food products that we eat, and certainly they used to have multiple types of different types of wheat and corn, but now it's all getting standardized with fewer and fewer and fewer, and now, of course, we have the big agriculture businesses coming in and creating genetically modified foods, and all of the corn looks exactly the same, and it's all got genes in it, and they can actually take a fish gene or a cancer gene or an antibiotic gene or a gene from the all sorts of animals and put them into our food under one guise or another. They can take something a gene from the a fish who lives in frozen water, almost frozen water, and put it into a tomato so the tomato won't freeze and won't be damaged by freezing, and all sorts of amazing things. What effect does it have on human beings, and where are the long-range studies? And they're refusing to do them, and we have to ask, why? Why? Because we're all being experimented on, and they did this time and time again. They did this with women during pregnancy. I can remember when I was in medical school, and they would give them large doses of estrogens to prevent a miscarriage. And it seemed to work fairly well, except that their daughters, a generation later, had cancer of the vulva and cancer of the vagina, and their daughters had cancer of the vagina and cancer of the vulva, and they had to have terrible deforming surgery, and a lot of those children died. It was a mass experiment. I don't think that they necessarily intended that to happen, and now we find that estrogens already do produce cancer, and after a generation of giving it to women, oh shucks, well, just too bad, now we'll go on to something else. They experiment on the human beings, but what about when you begin experimenting with their food? So pick that up story up there,
sure.
Jerry.
So the big danger in all of this, Stan, of course, is that as we look at that funnel concept, eating now at the skinny part of the funnel with very few species, very few varieties to choose from, is that the wheat varieties that we have today have been derived now from approximately 5, maybe 7 lines total. And they have so many common genes, things in common with all of those, that if you get a blight through, or one of these bioterrorism weapons, agroterrorism weapons that contains a blight that normally affects some wheat but not others, well, when all of the wheat is looking alike, when it's all very homogeneous, you end up with a susceptibility and an Achilles heel in that wheat that can take it all down. Well, at the very same time that we are making our crops more and more vulnerable to some onslaught, be it natural or man-made through nature, at the very same time we have a burgeoning global population that needs to be fed high-yield grains and plenty of them, and at the same time we're running out of oil, at the same time we're looking at pandemic, and you have to sit back and look at the big picture and say, what is it with these guys doing this, and women too, doing this research and further narrowing down the food supply, the seeds that would go on to feed the human race? And what they're doing is it's really, for some, it's altruistic. They're trying to increase yields for one particular wheat in order, or rice, to feed more and more and more people. But the reality is they're working because of the difficulty of the work and the amount of work that you have to do in these narrow molecular biology, genetic engineering specialties, is they have to focus on a very small, narrow window of research, and they lose the sight of the forest for the trees, when in fact, I see my job is sitting down and looking at the forest all the time and saying, hey, pay attention to this. What are we doing to the big picture for the human race? And I have been asking people, your listeners all over this country and all over the world, I have been asking people to please obtain from whatever places in your country that you can get them from, obtain all of the non-hybrid, natural, heirloom, non-GMO seeds that you can. Take them and freeze them. The Ark Institute can tell you how to do that. You have to dry them down some to make sure that the water doesn't rupture inside the frozen seed. It's not a big deal. You just ultra-dry them, and then you freeze them dry, just like that, and keep them in there for the long term. Grow them out at least every 3 years, grow some of them out, and keep them going. And then we always ask our customers in the Ark Institute to please grow out the seeds, multiply them inside the vegetables, the tomato, and so on. Harvest the seeds out. You will get hundreds from one fruit. And then we ask you to share them for free with your neighbors and friends. And in doing so, of course, we don't get customers. That's okay. Our goal, it's always been a mission, is to spread this seed and ask you to do the same thing. Spread it far and wide around this globe, just like the Norwegian experiment right now, where they're going to make a Noah's Ark for seeds in this frozen mountain. The Ark Institute has been a Noah's Ark for seed since 1995, and we have been asking folks to do just that. I don't want to see it just frozen in the permafrost of Norway. I want to see it in your freezers. I want to see it in your backpack if you have to get out of town in a hurry. And I want to see you spreading this around to as many people as you can so that we have a way to feed ourselves.
Okay, let's go ahead and let's get your website out and your telephone number.
Sure. ARK, A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, arkinstitute.com, arkinstitute.com, or you can call 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. 1912. Read all of the free news food supply updates on our website. Articles on genetically modified seed. Go back to the one I wrote in 1998 on the Terminator gene technology. That one's been around the world many times and has helped to really turn Europe on to this issue of what is coming down the pike from the U.S. government's technology.
All right, now our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Jerry, we've only got about another 10, 15 minutes before we have to let it go. But this is such an important issue. America is under attack today, I believe, from many, many things, including the fluoride and the mercury and the aspartame and certainly the genetically modified foods. They are not safe. And if you haven't read Jeffrey Smith's book, Seeds of Deception, we have a four-tape set on genetically modified food where we've actually analyzed the scientific studies, and we have other books on this same subject. It's so vitally important that our listeners out there get the information and help us sound the alarm. As our attention is focused on what's happening over in Iraq, where our boys are going to fight for freedom, here in the United States, the health of our people is being systematically damaged and destroyed, and we are losing this population. And in Europe, the people are up in arms. Here in the United States, you're not hearing about it because of the degree of control over the major media. We have five mega corporations that control 95% of our media. If you don't believe it, the book entitled The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian goes into the background of the control of the media. So little wonder that the average individual has so little idea of what's really going on and the very real danger from many of these genetically modified foods. And the scientific studies on them, are frightening, and the scientists who've spoken out and tried to warn the American people have been silenced. And many of them have lost their grants, have lost their jobs, have been humiliated and attacked and demonized and vilified. Why would you do that to a scientist? Because you don't want the people to learn the truth. So go ahead, Jerry.
Sure. And, you did mention obesity before, Stan, too. So much of this has been because of the modification of the chemistry of food. We have purified flour down to nothing but white dust, and then we take out something like 29 nutrients, and then we fortify it back again with 12. The math just doesn't amount. It just doesn't add up. You can take away over double as much that you're adding back into it. It's done because it has a longer shelf life and because it can easily be manipulated into these kind of foamy cakes and breads and so on. Now, thankfully, some people are getting wise to it, but if you look around this country and you see the massive amount of pathological obesity, and it is it's unfortunate that all of this modified food, not only genetically modified, but chemically modified food, changing into foamy, ultra-sweet, ultra-salty stuff that really doesn't taste anything like food was intended to taste. And then people get addicted to it. Why? Because high fructose corn syrup, all of these massive empty calories, and it's metabolized differently in the body. And we're getting these super high doses, and people then get addicted to it because it causes surges in insulin. Insulin burns up the sugar in the brain, then the brain feels like it needs more in order to keep feeding itself and so on. And so what you end up getting is a very large, sad problem in this country. Unfortunately, it's the lack of good health, the lack of feeling good, the strain on knees and joints and all of those things that come from this, and it's largely because of what we've done to our food supply, and that makes us kind of more lethargic. It makes us want to sit more, exercise less, and it is all related. It would not surprise me one bit to find out that much of the modification of food is the cause of 95% of the illness in this country. And we really have to talk about taking our food supply back, taking our country back, and no longer accepting an FDA that says you are not allowed to list on a label that this milk does not contain extra hormones in cows to make them yield mega quantities of milk. It's sad when their udders are nearly dragging on the ground. This isn't the way nature intended for them to be. They don't allow manufacturers to put it on them. They don't allow ranchers to test their own cattle for mad cow. They don't allow manufacturers of soy products to state that this has genetically modified soy in it and so on. They don't allow it. Well, isn't it time, since this is a government, we the people, isn't it time that we say to our employees, our government's employees, which is our employees, that we want to know what is in our food? We want to know, are these tomatoes genetically engineered? If so, what genes do they have in them? Do they have in genes that are natural pesticides that are now in every cell of the tomato or every kernel of the corn? Well, darn it, then I want the right to know if it's there so I personally can say, no, I don't want to eat it.
But you see, Jerry, the attitude of the bureaucrat is you don't have that right.
That's right.
And I remember talking to a gentleman from the Federal Drug Administration and asking him, why won't you allow your farmers, in this country, the ranchers, to test for mad cow disease in their own cows? Oh, we couldn't do that, he said. We might get a false positive, and it would ruin the industry. I said, you get a false positive, you do it over again,
right. And
you find out. Don't you want to find out if we had mad cow disease in this country?
Of course.
Oh, he said, we're going to do a study here next year sometime, and we're going to study a large number of cows. Well, he said I never got around to those studies. Why do you think that is? I mean, it really doesn't make sense. It's so reminiscent of when we were, dealing with the AIDS epidemic, and I raised the question, why should we do routine AIDS testing for AIDS in every doctor's office to try to identify who has the disease and try to stop its spread? And the reply was, why, we might get a false positive, and we would devastate the individual telling them they had it. And I said, well, you keep testing until you're absolutely certain. Oh, we could do that. And because we didn't do what was right, 500,000 Americans are dead. Another million are infected, and they're going to die. It's just a matter of time, which is why I wrote a book called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. And, probably 30 million have died throughout the world. Another 50 million are infected. They knew how to stop it. They didn't do it. Why aren't we doing what's logical here? Why can't our farmers test their cows for mad cow disease? Why don't we have the right to know whether there's genetically modified soy or corn or certainly cottonseed oil actually is genetically modified now, canola? Why are we allowed to do that? Well, the government is here to protect us. You don't have to worry. And I would like to suggest that people who want to trust the government, you may, but I personally don't want to. And there should be a cry all across this country to say, let's get the government off of our backs. Let us be responsible. Because lots of times, many times, they have released drugs that were unsafe. And I believe today they're releasing food that is unsafe. But you're not going to read about this in the newspaper, because the people who control the media don't want your attention focused on that.
Well, it's all the bottom line. It's all, unfortunately, it's profit. It's all the schemes to get out more and more and more of this stuff. And the unfortunate thing is part of it in this industry, and I'm not going to name the corporate names. You all know the corporate names. A part of it is they look and they say, okay, if we get enough of these crops out there, we get enough of the pollen out there, just like happened up in Canada. It all blows in the wind. The seed blows in the wind. You get tornadoes. You get hurricanes. You get everything. And unfortunately, it gets all over the place. And pretty soon, all of the crops are contaminated, and we've found them contaminated all the way down to the cradle of corn civilization, if you will, down at the bottom of Mexico. We've got contamination with U.S.-produced pollen and pollens produced, genetically modified pollen produced in France and so on. They are now down in Mexico, and they have contaminated all of the greatest, Teosinte corn, the greatest old heirloom cradle of corn civilization, if I could say that, is all contaminated down there with this pollen. Well, what happens is then they change the laws, if you will, and they say, well, a certain amount of modification, a certain amount of contamination with foreign genes is acceptable. That's what they're trying to get Europe to accept right now. Just a certain percentage is acceptable. Question, what is acceptable if you don't know what acceptable is to the United, to the human body? Why is it that more and more and more children are getting asthma? Asthma can be caused by particulate pollutants in cities, and it can be caused by allergic reactions to things, allergic asthma. Well, we're seeing an awful lot of allergy. We're seeing an awful lot of asthma. We're seeing an awful lot of allergic asthma. And you have to ask the question, if we are willy-nilly introducing foreign proteins into every cell in the food that we eat.
Hold that thought right there, Jerry. Okay, Jerry, just go right ahead and we got 3 minutes before we have to let you go.
Okay. So at any rate, I would really suggest that if folks want to concentrate on something for the families to keep them healthy, it would be to get in touch relentlessly with all of your representatives and let them know that you want to know what is being modified in your food and you want the labeling on it so you can make the decision, not them. In the meantime, we ask folks to take it into their own hands, and wherever you live and listen to this, if you have genetically non-modified seed in your country, heirloom seed, non-hybrid and so on, buy it, reproduce it, give it away. If you need help, we have a book, Seed Sowing and Saving, teaches you how to do it. Here in the United States, you could get such a collection of seed that we ask you to share with others, give away as much as you can. The ARC Institute, we have articles online that will help you do all of this stuff. Get involved in taking your country back, your food supply back, and let's all get healthy together. You can reach me at the ARK Institute, ARKInstitute.com, or at 1-800-255-1912. I'll give you a P.O. Box, P.O. Box 1721, Gold Beach, Oregon, 97444, and that will give you ample opportunity to contact us, learn how to do this stuff, and let's try to make a change. I'd love to see some change before I pass away. I'd love to see folks take this into their own hands and go ahead and take their country back, take their food back, and really get this thing moving, because this is unconscionable and it's almost irreversible once it takes hold.
Well, I think the biggest concern to me is the fact that the way that these genetically modified foods are spread, certainly by pollens into other uncontaminated areas, and suddenly we're seeing the entire corn supply, the entire soybean, the entire canola, the entire cotton industry increasingly contaminated with this. And, of course, the studies on this, long-term studies on human beings, there are absolutely none, but the animal studies, and there are reliable animal studies, have shown serious consequences, both as far as the offspring of animals that are fed this, and, of course, the animals themselves. So, you know, you should be concerned, and there's a great deal of information we have. I know there's a great deal of information that Jerry has, and I want you to get up on her website. I want you to read her information. I want you to find out what's going on, and then I want you to tell other people. Warn them. We'll be right back. Well, Jerry, I want you to go ahead and give your telephone number and your website out just one more time for us, will you?
All righty. It's ARK, A-R-K, Institute, I-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-E.com, 1-800-255-1912.
All right. One more time. We'll give the telephone number one more time.
1-800-255-1912.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Jerry. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Jerry Guidetti. And And I think her information is vitally important that you understand the potential complications of genetically modified food. Now, there's a wonderful book. It's called Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith, and we've had Jeffrey on a number of times, and he is a very careful scientist. He's, of course, writes regularly on newswithviews.com. You can get his articles there. But, of course, his message is just the same as Jerry Guidetti's. You have to understand that the scientific studies show that this is very, very damaging to animals. And if it's damaging to animals, where are the human studies showing it's safe? And there are none. And the government knows about the animal studies that show it's unsafe. And, of course, they're allowing it to be put out. You have to ask yourself, why? Why won't they let us know that we are eating genetically modified food? What are they afraid of? In other countries, they are just refusing to do it, although we're trying to force them through the World Trade Organization to incorporate this food into the diets throughout the world. Because, of course, George Bush says it's perfectly safe, and the Food and Drug Administration says it's perfectly safe. But that's what they said about PIOCs, too. Let me just simply suggest, if you'd like more information, the book Seeds of Deception. We have a four-tape set on this. If you'd like more information, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a little pamphlet we put together on genetic engineering. That's genetic engineering and population control. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they're able to modify organisms. They've created new organisms. AIDS is an entirely new disease. In fact, there's not one form of AIDS. There's eight different subtypes of this, and they all occurred spontaneously all over the world within a period of a year or two at the same time. How did that happen? And I will tell you that some of the scientists who've been working on this for the government have come forward and admitted what it was about, but you'll never hear about that through regular channels, although we do have a video talk of a lecture I gave for the Prophecy Club called Planned Population Reduction, and of course that's Planned Population Reduction. Anyway, go to our website at radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, and please give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to get some of our newsletters, if you'd like a newsletter on genetic engineering, we could send you one of the older ones. Call us at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to understand what's really going on as far as the oil crisis. We have the peak oil too. Iraq, it's called The Wrong War. It's a newsletter. We'll send them to you. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're involved in a spiritual battle. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are dark spirits of forces aligned against humanity. We're involved in a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us on the line Steve Russo, and we're going to be talking about his book, Protecting Your Teen from Today's Witchcraft, A Parent's Guide to Confronting Wicca and the Occult. And, it's, of course, it's by Steve Russo. So, Steve, how are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. And
good.
Of course, we had a great interview with you the other morning. Really appreciate it. And of course, I think this is such an important issue. I think the average individual out there with teenagers would find it very difficult to think that their child might in any way be interested in Wicca. And yet, you, of course, having been at this for a long time and talked to a lot of children, young people, find that really many young people are really getting into the occult because they seem to feel that Christianity isn't giving them what they need.
Exactly, Dr. Stan. They're searching for more. They're definitely a spiritually hungry generation, and they're just not finding it in the church today. And it has nothing to do with Jesus, but it has everything to do with the way the church is presenting the living God. And kids are hungering for more, and we have a battle on our hands. I mean, there's a battle for a generation going on, and these kids are turning in droves to Wicca and witchcraft, even within the church today.
And I think that this is really what's so surprising, is that a lot of kids will get fascinated with witchcraft and fascinated with the power that they can tap into, and their parents have no idea why they're becoming more reclusive and why maybe they may even have an altar set up someplace in the house, and you have no idea what's going on in their minds, and they're not going to reveal this to you. So you pick up the story. How did you get interested in this, and how can parents begin to understand the frustration that so many of these young people feel that is driving away from the church and driving them into this occult worship?
The interest for me happened, as you mentioned, really over a period of time, but I kept getting more and more kids coming up to me at school assemblies, in churches, at youth camps, emailing me, sending me snail mail letters, asking me they're asking me about Wicca, they're telling me they're involved in it. Some wanting my opinion, some just wanting me to know why they did it. And Dr. Stan, I started looking around for resource material because I thought there's got to be something out there that we could put in the hands of these kids as well as their parents. I couldn't find anything. And that's why I decided to try to put the books together. Actually, it was one book, and I told you this, I think, in our time yesterday, that I tried for 4 years to get a publisher to publish just the first book was supposed to be, and only book at that time, was supposed to be a book for just teenagers. Finally, Bethany House picked up the project, and they decided to do a book for parents and one for teens.
All right. Well, I think it's an important issue, and I think it's important that our parents understand what their teens are really facing today. They go to school, and, of course, they're not allowed to mention God. They're taught all about evolution. If evolution's true, then obviously the Bible is not. The Bible is a lie, and everything they're being told by their parents and in the church is a lie. And then, of course, they're being, hit with all these things about suicide education and death education and values clarification, which means there are no values, there are no absolutes, there's no right, there's no wrong. Little wonder that our children are already so confused today. And I think that's part of the agenda. I think they know exactly what they're doing to them. Well, our guest is Steve Russo, and of course he's written a book, Protecting Your Teen from Today's Witchcraft, A Parent's Guide to Confronting Wicca and the Occult. And, of course, Steve was just saying that he really got into this because there were so many young people who were coming to him as he goes around, and he had worked for many years with Focus on the Family, and now he has his own ministry, and still, though he's still affiliated with Focus, and trying to reach people. And, do you still play the drums? You were a drummer, weren't you?
Yes, I was, and I still am. In fact, the drums have become a huge part of our ministry. I use them as my hook, so to speak, when I go on these middle school, junior high, and high school campuses across North America, and even overseas. I'll be leaving for India a week from Saturday, and apparently the drumming part of my life is quite a draw. So it's a lot of fun. You know, God gave me that talent and ability, and I love using it with kids.
Well, now, where do the different spirituality, deceptive influences such as Wicca and the occult come from in the lives of teenagers? In other words, how do teenagers get involved in the occult and in Wicca?
Popular culture, Dr. Stan, you know, we can look at what's on television, even primetime TV. I was shocked when a new show came out this fall called Supernatural. And I watched the first 15 minutes of the first episode, and that's all I could take. I had not seen that much occultic violence on, you know, primetime television. I had never seen that much before. I just was appalled that somebody would put that on in the name of entertainment. But you look at shows like that and Charmed, and then you look at movies that are out by the dozens, you know, with these kinds of themes. You look at video games, games for the computer. You look at comic books even today. I don't know how many parents have picked up a comic book recently, but they have become so dark, much more dark, you know, than what I remember as a young person. Even some of the themes of music today. So every place these kids look, let alone the Internet, there are millions of references to the word Wicca. If you just log on, you do a Google search, whatever kind of search you want to do, there are literally millions of references to Wicca and witchcraft. Kids can sit in their bedroom if they've got access to the Internet on their computer, and they can be taking classes on Wicca and witchcraft. Their parents have no clue what they're doing.
Now, of course, this is the great tragedy, and these young people, many of them are lost, many of them are searching for something. Isn't that really a desire to really be identified with something, to be able to access power, to be important?
Absolutely. You know, power is a big thing for them. You know, adults are looking for power today, but especially young people. They want power to feel special.
Hold that thought right there, Steve. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Steve Russo, and we're really talking about his book, Going Into the Background. It's a parent's guide as far as Wicca is concerned and the occult. It's entitled Protecting Your Teen from Today's Witchcraft, A Parent's Guide to Confronting Wicca and the Occult. And, of course, most parents really have no idea that their children are getting into this, do they, Steve?
They really don't, Dr. Stan. It's... Well, so many parents are naive. Like you said at the very top of the show, a lot of parents don't believe that their son or daughter could possibly be interested in this. And, you know, there's not a particular look that these kids have. That, in other words, you can't say, well, boy, by looking at the way they're dressed and their hair, that young person is into Wicca. There isn't any standard look. I think parents would be surprised and shocked. I have a lot of pastors that are shocked when I tell them that there's kids in their own church that are involved in Wicca, because there's something missing when it comes to their spiritual search, and they're looking for more. They're looking. We started to talk about power to feel special, power to get friends and relationships, power sometimes to get vengeance on people that have hurt them, and they don't see the power in the church. I think I've mentioned this story to you before, and at the risk of repeating myself, I'll say it again. I was speaking at a high school assembly. After the assembly, which happens frequently, I had a bunch of kids come up. Three of them, two girls and a guy, told me that they were Wiccans. They said, Steve, we used to be into Wicca. We used to be Christians. Now we're into Wicca. And Dr. Stan, I think what they were saying is they used to go to church, because I don't believe anybody could truly know the Lord Jesus Christ and no matter how rough their life was, turn their back on him. So I think these kids were churched, and they said, Steve, we went to church. We couldn't find anybody who could tell us what they believed, why they believed it, and they were all living powerless lives. And Dr. Stan, I don't think those kids were that far off.
Well, Chris, don't be afraid to repeat what you've said before, because this is an entirely different audience, and this program will be heard all across America, but not the people you talked to the other morning. So please don't worry about telling a story again. I think it's so important, because I think it exemplifies what you're saying. Young people are turning to Wicca because they're not finding what they need in churches. People cannot defend the faith. People, you know, are not schooled in apologetics. They don't know the history of the church, and they do not have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I mean, just because you go to church doesn't make you a Christian. That is that personal relationship that separates you from other people and actually accesses you to the power that comes from the God who created the heavens and the earth. And when you access that, your life will never be the same again.
Absolutely. Dr. Stan, it's that whole difference between truly being converted to Jesus Christ and just making some kind of a flippant decision. And we need to get back to the basics of our faith. You know, and I don't care how old you are, how young you are, how long you've been in the church, you need to be able to articulate what you believe, why you believe it, and then be able to share that as you live it.
Amen to that. Well, what are some of the core beliefs of Wicca? Because Wicca, I think, is different than witchcraft. It's different than Luciferianism. It's different than Satanism. It is a unique religion. In fact, it's really actually a very new religion, isn't it? It's sort of like Kwanzaa, you know, is a new holiday, sort of a Christmas for black people. It was just sort of made up one day. Somebody made it up, and it's been around maybe for 20 years, has no historical basis at all, and I think it's degrading to blacks. But anyway, an awful lot of people can be taken in. So where did Wicca come from?
If we just go back to the 1950s, there was a disenchanted Anglican from the Church of England named Gerald Gardner. He found himself in Southeast Asia. He started to pick up bits and pieces from the occult and some various religious practices, came back, and it was almost as if, Dr. Stan, he was going down this buffet table of religions. And he took a little bit from Christianity, a little bit from Judaism, took some from the occult, paganism, and so on and so forth. And he wrote a couple of books back in the 50s that really set the foundation for modern-day Wicca. And it does have some roots, certainly, all the way back to ancient paganism, to the occult. But it's also got this flair, I call it a self-styled buffet-style religion. And really, it can be summed up. There's something that they have called the Wiccan Reed. And it's actually quite a lengthy poem. But at the very end of it is one line. And the line is this. It says, "And ye harm none, do what ye will." And that's an important thing for parents to understand, because basically what Wicca is saying, what the Reed is saying, is that you can do anything in the world that you want to, so long as it doesn't cause harm to yourself or anyone else. But the problem is how they define harm. And because it's relative, and of course that fits perfectly with our postmodern culture, that there is no moral absolute, there is no right and wrong. So when they say harm, what you and I, as followers of Christ, would say is harmful, they would say, that's not harmful, that's your truth, it's not my truth. So it's a very... It's a religion that's on very, very shaky ground.
Well, certainly it is on shaky ground, because, of course, I believe there's only one true religion. Of course, but the trouble is that we're introducing young people to the occult, aren't we?
We really are. And what has happened is we've become desensitized to it in our culture. We were talking a moment ago about kind of the influences of where this stuff comes from. All you have to do is look around you, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. I mean, our kids, we as adults, have been desensitized to evil, to violence, to the occult, to paganism, to witchcraft, because it's everywhere, and it is a protected religion. You know, it's amazing. I find it fascinating that, for example, this last Halloween, there was a school district up in Washington that couldn't celebrate Halloween. Now, I'm not for celebrating Halloween, but I do think we should participate in alternatives, because it's a great time to turn on the light of the gospel and share that with people who are searching. But they told the teachers that they couldn't do anything to participate in Halloween because it was degrading to the Wiccan witches. Absurd.
Well, you know, the thing is that certainly people should understand that Halloween and the very solstices actually are holy days for these occult religions. And there are really millions of people affiliated with one or another of the occult religions, whether they be the Druids or up at Mount Shasta here in California, certain times of the year. Thousands of people meet and gather there to pay homage to the spiritual hierarchy and the Great White Brotherhood and the Ancients of Wisdom that is said to be located there. But there is a growing occult movement all across America. There is hardly any major city without a metaphysical bookstore in it. And when you go there, of course, you will have all of this literature that's readily available as far as Wicca. In fact, how can young people get into this? Do they get into this certainly on the Internet? Do they get into this by sending wafer books? Can they buy these books in Borders and other popular bookstores?
Dr. Stan, all of the above and more. There, you can find them everywhere. At Borders, Barnes & Noble, any major bookstore carries them. They can be ordered. There are bookstores that actually focus on this kind of material. I've been into them myself, and in fact, there's a very interesting one there in Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, that carries all the supplies you would need. In fact, it's like walking into Harry Potter Live.
Is that on Pacific Avenue there?
Yes, it is. It's called, actually, it's not Pacific Avenue. It's one street, I believe, north of that, but it parallels Pacific. And I find it very fascinating. The store, contains everything. It's everything that you need. In fact, when I walked in, that's what they told me. They said, we have everything you need to practice Wicca. It's everywhere. I think probably the greatest source, and this is just my opinion, where kids are getting information is the Internet, because it's free. It is there by the millions of references. There's chat rooms. In fact, I found myself in an interesting situation in examining what was going on in a chat room that was for Wiccan Christians or Christian Wiccans.
I see. Well, that's sort of a paradoxical situation.
It really is.
But I'm sure a lot of the young people don't see why there's anything wrong, with being a Christian and being a Wicca.
They really don't, because, again, everything is relative, and with Wicca, it's a self-styled religion. You were asking, earlier about some of the beliefs. We talked about the Wiccan Rite. One of the other core values for them is it is a self-styled religion, and there's only really a few things that all Wiccans would adhere to. One would be the Rite. One would be the threefold law. Another one would be the concept that there is an all, which is a female spirit out in the cosmos somewhere, and this all gave birth to the female goddess, and the female goddess gave birth to the god. But after that, it's all up for grabs, because you get to design your own deities. You get to make them any way you want to. Wiccans also believe in reincarnation, which is a key tenet, to their religion, if you will have it. And I find that interesting when I start unpacking it for people that are in Wicca, because it's fascinating that they see a value in paying for somebody else's mistakes. We would call that sin, over and over and over again, and they spend lifetimes doing this, and when they finally jump off this spiral that goes down, they end up merging with the all and ceasing to exist.
And of course, this is very, very similar to the sort of Hindu type of religion.
Absolutely.
Or certainly the religions that they would have in Nepal and in Tibet.
Absolutely. It and there, again, is part of that buffet style of pulling different elements together to make up their own religion. So it is very, very self-styled.
But, of course, the other thing is, of course, that there is an effort to get in contact with the supernatural.
Yes.
And there really is, of course, another dimension out there. It's very hard for rationalists in this society, this materialistic society, to believe there's another dimension. But these young people, curious, inquisitive, are beginning, of course, to contact this other dimension and the beings from the other dimension. And when they do, of course, strange and mysterious things happen. And either drives them out of this, frightens them to death, or they go deeper and deeper to a point where there soon will be no return. We'll be back here in just a moment with Steve Russo talking about Wicca in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, one of the questions is, how would parents know if their children are getting interested in Wicca? How would they even be aware of the fact that their children are beginning to dabble in this affair? Most kids are not going to come to their parents and say, "Hey, Mom, I've decided to become a Wicca."
No, they certainly aren't. But Dr. Stan, there are some signs that we can look at and see. And I want to preface my comments by saying just because a parent sees one or more of these signs doesn't necessarily mean that their son or daughter is involved in Wicca, but it does mean that there's a problem that needs to be dealt with very promptly and properly. One of those signs would be a withdrawal from routine activities. When you see that son or daughter really withdrawing away from other people, their siblings, you as a parent, friends, other family members, there's something going on there that's wrong, and it very well could be they're involved in Wicca. Another sign would be finding what's called a book of shadows in their room. And this is, in its essence, a diary or a journal for those practicing Wicca. In there, they list the spells and incantations that they're using. They list contact with the spirit world, as you just mentioned a moment ago. They list a lot of different things. That's a very clear sign that something's wrong. Another thing would be the jewelry that they're wearing, insignias maybe on a belt buckle, on a ring, on a necklace, a T-shirt that they're wearing, doodling they're doing on their school book covers or things that they have hanging on their walls. There's a lot of signs there. Another very obvious sign would be an altar. And, of course, you mentioned this earlier in the show. This altar could contain some ceremonial daggers, possibly, different candles, some herbs and spices. Parent could find this altar in a closet, in a bedroom, in a basement, in a garage, out in the backyard someplace. That's a very obvious sign. An obsession with suicide and death is another sign that not only something is wrong, but they very well could be involved in practicing Wicca. And again, this could be seen by music they're listening to, programs they're watching, places they're going on the internet, books and magazines they're reading. For some, it's the dark makeup and kind of that goth look. So there are a number of signs that parents really need to be aware of, and I would really encourage parents listening that don't just write this off and say, this is a passing fad, this is a passing fantasy. You really need to investigate to see how, at what level, your son or daughter may be dabbling with this darkness.
Well, Chris, I think that the significant thing is parents have to realize that there really is power out there that can be accessed. They really can, of course, come up with their spells and their rituals and all of these things. And of course, you won't know what they're thinking, and not unless you talk to them about it. But once they begin, of course, to dabble in these things, and they find that they can really begin to do things that are supernatural. Have you run into that? Have any of them talked to you about that?
I have, Dr. Stan, and there's a lot of things that they have. They will talk about spells that they've cast on somebody and they've seen results. And you brought up a very, very important factor that I think is missing in the church today, and that is acknowledging the spiritual battle and that there is power available. Research is showing us that at least 50% of those who call themselves born again do not believe that the devil is real. Now, where would these kids be getting power? There's only two sources of power. We're either going to get it from the living God, or we're going to get it from the devil, from Lucifer, from Satan, whatever word you want to use to describe him, whatever title you want to give him.
Hold that thought right there for a minute, Stephen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Steve was simply saying that there is another dimension, that there really is a devil out there, and there's two sources you can get power from. One is from the living God, the creator of heaven and earth, but if you tap into the demonic realm, you'll be able to get power there as well. But, of course, this is something you certainly don't want to do, because the devil never gives you anything for nothing. And if you accept his largesse, you accept the benefits of going with him, why, you will certainly spend eternity in hell with him. Most Christians don't believe that anymore. The devil and hell don't sell very well in modern day churches. It sounds really sort of archaic, and so we don't teach this in churches. And because we don't teach that there really is a spiritual dimension, these young people are totally unprepared when they come in contact with a power that is readily available on the dark side, a power that is alluring, a power that is promising, a power that gives you a feeling of exhilaration and meaning, and a power that is a one-way trip to eternal damnation. So pick up the story there, please.
Yeah, it's Dr. Stan, I love what you're saying, because we don't believe this because we're not taking the Bible seriously. You don't have to look any further than what the Scripture teaches, and that should be our authority. God's Word is accurate. God's Word is authoritative, and it very clearly delineates the difference between the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of hell. And we have got to get back to this truth. And I think we are doing, it's heresy to say that Satan doesn't exist, that he's just some figure for evil, some force out there. I received a letter from a Baptist pastor from Texas who was rebuking me because I was talking to kids about the devil. And he said, how dare you lie to them? Well, I'll tell you what, I would not want to be in that man's shoes, because the truth is the devil is real, but more importantly, the devil is mortally wounded. Colossians 2:15 tells us that, and he was wounded when Christ hung on the cross.
Amen to that. Well, I think that we have to get back to really teaching the Bible as it is, and we have to let people understand the spiritual battle that's going on, and the temptations, the true spiritual temptations, to begin to access power from the other side. And this is really what WIC is all about. Now, how would a parent begin to suspect that there is a problem there? And then, of course, what should parents do to counsel their children about the dangers of becoming involved in this sort of thing?
Well, first, we've kind of listed some of those signs. We talked about the Book of Shadows and withdrawal from routine activities and things like that. So when you see those, as a parent, don't panic as much as you want to, as much as you may even be fearful that your son or daughter is involved. Do not panic, because you don't know to what level they are involved. And that's the key. You've got to develop some healthy communication. And in so many homes today with teenagers, there's these emotional barriers, these walls between mom and dad and their son and daughter. And you've got to start chipping away at those and tearing them down. And the first step, after beginning to pray for them and asking for God's wisdom and asking God, the Spirit of God, to close their minds to the lies of the enemy, you've got to start building a bridge of communication to them, a bridge that Jesus can walk across, healthy communication, where you are listening to what they have to say and listening carefully with thoughtful attention.
And I certainly think this is so very important. And I think, of course, children have to see in the lives of their parents an example, and they have to realize that
absolutely,
Christianity really means something to them. Their whole life is, evolved around Christianity. It can't be just something you go to church on Sunday, but in everything that they do, they have to set the example, because the parent is the example of God to them. And, of course, the parent has to be, only can do that if they themselves are submissive to God.
And especially fathers, Dr. Stan, I've got three children of my own, and I realize what a responsibility I have as a father. And to the dads that are listening out there, I just really challenge you to get involved in the lives of your kids, and remember, your kids are going to look at you, and they're going to see God through you. And, I've talked to more kids than I care to count who don't want to have a whole lot to do with God the Father, because their father, human father, is abusive and non-existent.
And, of course, the other thing is, of course, what we're seeing in America today. And in Christian churches, in Christian families, perhaps even more than in secular families, is the breaking apart of the family.
Yes.
I mean, the family is the integral unit that gives the child the security. And the incidence of divorce in Christian families, I think, reflects the general breakdown of Christian morality in our society. Would you agree?
I would totally agree, Dr. Stan. It's shocking, it's overwhelming, and you need to put an end to it.
We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Steve Russo. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest again this evening is Steve Russo, and we're talking about his book, Protecting Your Teens from Today's Witchcraft. And we were simply talking about the tragedy that we see, as the family breaks up, and suddenly the child loses that security, and now they're looking for something else, and here is the promise of witchcraft. And this is really one of the most rapidly growing religions in America today, isn't it?
It is, Dr. Stan. It's the fastest growing religion among high school and college age students in North America, not just in the United States, but across Canada as well.
Now, what is the big H in parenting?
Oh, you've hit one of my hot buttons. It's hypocrisy. You know, we have, I think next to communication, I think that one of the biggest issues we're dealing with in the family today is hypocrisy. Because as you just said a moment ago, kids are looking to their parents. They're watching their parents. And a lot of parents will get upset for the music their son or daughter is listening to, the friends they may have, where they go on the internet, movies, television shows they're watching, books they're reading. And that same parent will turn around. They'll bring soft porn into the house with DVDs. They will watch shows on television like Desperate Housewives. In fact, Dr. Stan, I'm ashamed to admit it, but there's a church here in Southern California where I live that women get together on Sunday nights to have a Desperate Housewives party, and these are supposed to be women who claim they have a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Well, I think we're in real trouble as far as what's going on in America today. Now, what should a parent do if they suspect that their children are getting interested in Wicca? I mean, how do you approach a child and tell them this is a one-way trip to eternal damnation with a child who doesn't even understand the concepts of the devil or certainly eternity or certainly hell?
We've got to approach this, unfortunately, on a multi-pronged, attack, if you will have it. Number one is we've got to examine our own lives for hypocrisy, because none of us are perfect, and we're all works in progress. As that bumper sticker once said, be patient because God isn't finished with me yet. But we can't use that as an excuse either. And kids have got to be able to look at us, our own children, and say, you know what, I do see a difference in my mom, my dad's life. I know they're not perfect, but I also see a difference, and I see that they're growing. So we've got to examine ourselves on that front. We've also got to be praying for them fervently. And then we've got to be listening carefully. And we can listen by asking questions. I often tell parents we need to take a Socratic approach.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Steve Russo. His book is entitled Protecting Your Teens from Today's Witchcraft, A Parent's Guide to Confronting Wicca and the Occult. Now, to the average individual, that doesn't sound very exciting. That's somebody else's problem. But believe me, many of our young people are getting fascinated by the occult. First of all, Steve, where can people actually get copies of your book? Do you have a website? Do you have any means where people can reach you if they're interested in more information?
Yes, Dr. Stan. First of all, we have a website. It's very simple. It's www.realanswers.com. That's realanswers.com. They can order the book for parents as well as a book for teenagers as well as other resources on the website. They can also call us directly at our office in Southern California. That number is area code 909-466-7060. That's 909-466-7060. And we'd be happy to, talk about even a possible event in your city to reach young people and reach parents.
All right, fine. So if you'd like, of course, to get in touch with Steve. And certainly, if there's any way you can possibly get this sort of material out in your church or in your schools, I think it's important. Do you do much in the way of going into schools and talking to young people there?
Yes, I do. Dr. Stan, I probably spend about 20 weeks a year on public school campuses. And, of course, as we mentioned earlier in the show, I bring my drums. I do a presentation that we call Choices, and I talk to young people about how to make better choices. Unfortunately, here in North America, I'm not supposed to mention God, Jesus, or the Bible, but yet if you were sitting in the audience, you would hear me quoting the Bible as timeless truth, which it is. And I believe, you know, as Scripture well puts it, that God's Word doesn't return void. But it's fascinating to me. In fact, I'm on my way to India in a week, and I've been given the opportunity and on school campuses there to present the gospel and invite young people to receive Christ.
In fact, you can do that in Russia today. You just can't do that in once Christian America, now pagan America. And this is not happening by accident. Ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to our programs regularly, you know that we believe there is a conspiracy against God in America. And it is at the very highest levels of our country. There's no justification for any of the Supreme Court decisions and the laws of our land other than there are people who would destroy the Christian foundation of this country. Now, Steve was simply saying during the break that one of the big problems we have in America today is hypocrisy in parents. And if the parents are saying one thing and then doing another, that, of course, creates a real conflict in the child. That's what he refers to the big H in parenting. You can't be hypocritical. You've got to be the same. You've got to be solid, and you can't vary. And they have to see in your life the reflection of God's love, because you become their representative of God here on this earth. And then, of course, the question is what you do when you find out that your teen is into witchcraft, and then how would you approach them? How would you try to make them understand the very danger of what they're dabbling with? I mean, the average parent doesn't have enough knowledge of witchcraft to be able to discuss it with the child, because the child has probably read things on the Internet, read the books. They know a lot more about Wicca. So how would a parent go to the child and say, don't you know what you're into? Because the parent really doesn't understand what they're into.
No, they really don't. And Dr. Stan, at the risk of sounding like a commercial, that's why I'm thrilled that God's given us the opportunity to have these two books. Of course, we've been talking about protecting your teen from today's witchcraft tonight, but we also have a companion book called What's the Deal with Wicca that you and I have talked about previously. And I would suggest parents get a copy of each book and, you know, really read that one for parents, because that will equip you to ask the right questions. And what you want to get to with that son or daughter of yours that may be dabbling in Wicca is you want to find out what need in their life, what unmet need there is. And when you find that, you can begin to deal with it. And I think one of the best ways we can deal with it with Wicca is to help kids unpack it, so to speak, and think logically. Because what I have found in every single case of a young person I've talked to about Wicca, they haven't really thought it through. It feels good. It's an emotional thing. It's politically correct. It fits in with our relativistic society. But they haven't thought through it logically. And because we have a generation, this is the first generation to think in a non-linear fashion, we have got to help connect the dots for them.
I certainly agree with you totally. And then, of course, the real problem is that children have to realize there are absolutes, there is a right or wrong, there is a God. And of course, here is an opportunity to get into something that gives you power. And as Steve was saying earlier, there are rituals, there are rites, you put spells on the people. But some of these young people have actually tapped into this supernatural power, and hasn't it actually really begin to frighten them as the demonic spirits which they are tapping into begin to take hold?
It does frighten them. For some of them, they're almost so numb that there is no fear. But other kids I've talked to, they've been frightened by what they've seen, what they've experienced. And again, I just want to remind parents, as you have done earlier, Dr. Stan, this power is real. Now, it is limited because God has limited the power that Satan and the powers of darkness can exercise, but there still is the reality of this power, and we need to show kids the source of ultimate power, which is the Lord Jesus Christ, and what he accomplished through his death on the cross, his burial, and, of course, the resurrection what a tremendous promise we have. I mean, where would we be without the resurrection power of Jesus Christ?
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question with Steve, because he studied this, and he talks to these young people who are getting into this. Now, this is the most rapidly growing religion among young people in America today, and it attracts them because first of all, it puts them in opposition to their parents, and so much of what goes on in our schools today is designed to turn the child against the parent. And they've been playing games with the minds of these children. I mean, you get kids into school, young impressionable people, and you begin to teach them about suicide. You begin to teach them about death, and you begin to get them to write their obituary, and you begin to get them into values clarification, and you get them into all of these various things that take them away from the realization that we are to be children of God, and we're to look to God for direction, and there is a right and there is a wrong. And but of course, these young people, they spend all their time learning about sex and sensuality, and it's all on feelings. And of course, if there is nothing right, there's nothing wrong, why don't you just do whatever you want to? And doesn't Wicca basically tell you more or less, do whatever you will as long as you don't hurt anyone?
Absolutely. That's that whole Wiccan read, Dr. Stan. And of course, the key problem there is how they define harm, because of it being, steeped in relativism. What we would say is harmful, they would say is not. But Wicca really is creating an environment, along with our culture, for anarchy, because we've got kids that you start laying this thing out, looking down the road here, we've got a serious problem on our hands.
And I don't think that the average parent understands what is happening in our schools. The fact that the purpose of our education is not to educate our children. It is actually to change their attitude towards God and towards family and country. But most their attitude towards God. And, of course, once you, of course, take away their belief in God, then, of course, can be filled with anything. Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling. And we have a do. If you would like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Steve, why, this is the time. He's on the front lines of this battle, trying to reach young people. And Roger, you had a question about Narnia, about some of the special effects. What was your question?
Kind of a second one, just before you came out of the break, when you said we need with our children to take a Socratic approach. Do I take that to mean need to ask them hardball questions for which they need supply robust answers?
How would you approach that Socratically?
No, I don't think we need to look for hardball answers, Roger. I think what we need to do is just ask them questions to get them to think. Because kids don't think today. They spend too much time in front of screens, and they don't think logically. So by taking a Socratic...
As I get calls from people all across America who are trying to explain, even to adults, what is going on. And the common statement I get over and over again is, they don't think. They don't want to hear anything. They're not interested in the implications of what's going on. And my reply is, ask questions. Don't try to tell them. Try to get them to think. And I think that's exactly what Steve is trying to do with these young people, encouraging parents to ask the children questions, to try to break this barrier that has been created through our educational process, through television, through motion pictures, through so many of the books. And you really read the books that the children are reading today. They are scary. I will tell you, I've read a couple of them that are so-called classics for our young people, and they give you a sense of hopelessness, as if life really has no meaning. What's that old saying? We live lives of quiet desperation. You live and then you die, and no good deed will ever go unpunished. And when our young people have this sort of an attitude, why, a little wonder they have this feeling of hopelessness. And here, now, they can suddenly get into Wicca, and Wicca gives them power. It gives them meaning. It gives them something that's different than other children, because now they can do things that other people can't, and they can tap into the supernatural. Of course, they don't understand the supernatural they're tapping into, but would you agree with that, Steve?
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. They don't understand what they're tapping into because they're so desperate, number one, for power and answers, and number two, once again, coming back to this theme that we've picked up on right here, they don't think. They're not processing what they're doing.
Do you see much crossover interest being generated from the high quality of today's special effects as being almost a virtual reality and then possibly even including the new Narnia movie and God Bless?
All right, fine. Thanks so much. And I think that really, I think Roger was saying the special effects is so often we turn on television, you'll see these almost like flashing lights or flashing scenes going quickly. This has almost a hypnotic fascination for people. I know when I watch it, it makes me almost feel sick, but I know that they're playing games with our minds. They're playing games with the minds of these young, impressionable people, and they're even doing the same thing with the older people. And really, I think that what they're doing with television today is altering our whole precept or concept of reality.
I also think there's an interesting twist to this, Dr. Stan and Roger, with the special effects and all. And we look at, you could see this with the number of reality TV shows that are showing up everywhere. I think kids as well as adults are almost, they've almost to the point of saying, okay, go ahead, try to show me something, some special effect that goes beyond what you've already done. And I think that's why the search is coming back full circle now to say, what's real? Where is reality? We've seen these special effects. We've seen virtual reality. But does reality exist? And we have the opportunity to say, yes, it does, and point them to the Lord Jesus Christ.
And, Chris, that's really what the parent should be doing. But if the parent doesn't know there's a problem, and if the parent really doesn't have the faith themselves, they're not going to be able to guide their child correctly. And I really think this is one of the big problems today, is that so many parents may go to church, but are they really Christians? Have they had that life-transforming experience of giving their life to Jesus Christ, and now, of course, beginning to put their reliance upon him, not simply going to church on Sunday because that's the thing to do and that's how to make business contacts, but you know that your life is transformed and ever after, why, it will never be the same again, and you're to serve him rather than yourself, and you're to carry out his instructions as far as your relationship, you know, with your neighbor and certainly with your family, which is your most important project, and of course God gave those children to parents to raise. And if we turn them over to the school and we let the school raise them and establish their values, then we've dishonored God and his plan. So basically, you know, what if you did find that your child was into Wicca, what would you do?
I would ask them, you know, of course, what is it that they're getting out of it? And then I would ask them to consider making a comparison to not the Jesus of cultural Christianity, not the Jesus, I'm going to use the phrase, of the Christian ghetto, but the Jesus of the Scripture. And take the time to unpack this stuff with them and say, let's examine what the Bible really teaches. For example, Wicca it's been called a girl-friendly religion. And, of course, you know, the feminists and everybody have jumped on this bandwagon, you know, an anti-Christianity because God is anti-woman. That couldn't be anything further from the truth if they would really study the Bible. The problem is, yes, there are abuses even in the church today when it comes to the treatment of women, but that's not how God feels. So we've got to cut through all of these layers of things and the cultural Christianity and get back to biblical Christianity and sit down with our kids and challenge them to go through it. And I'll tell you what, in their search for real, if they sense that you are real and you are genuine, I can't tell you the conversations I've had with kids on the radio and kids in person who are involved in Wicca who will come full circle and say, you know what, Steve, I respect you because I believe you're real and what you're saying is real and I'm willing to listen to you. And parents have got to get real.
And I think that one of the most important things is we have to be able to defend the faith. We have to, you know, study apologetics, understand why Christianity is the and the only religion. Certainly you want to know what the other people believe, you know, as far as the other religions are concerned, but there's no way you can equivocate. You either believe Christianity is the true religion or it's not. And I happen to believe that it is, and I believe that, you know, Christ's admonition that I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but through me. But simply those are words. How do you apply that in everyday life? And once you can begin to communicate that to others, why you can begin to convince people, as I am convinced, that the Bible is real, that the prophecies are real, that the power is real, that the promise is real. At that point, we can begin to communicate that to our children.
That's right, Dr. Stan, and I think that's becoming, again, becoming equipped as a parent, becoming knowledgeable of God's Word. And, you know, it seems like we know everything about everything except what we need to know, and that's about the living God. And God has given us His Word. He's given it to us as a handbook for living, and we need to be able to apply it. We need to be able to live it. And when we know it, we can apply it and we can live it, which means we've got to take time to study it, to read it, to meditate on it, to make it our primary source of spiritual nourishment.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here with Steve Russo and, of course, his... Well, Steve, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. So what are the parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Coming back full circle, Dr. Stan, let's acknowledge the reality of the spiritual battle that we have. Satan is real. He is using, you know, the same old lie, but in a new package with Wicca. Let's acknowledge that. Let's get back to the Bible before we go back to the jungle. Let's dig into the fact that the Bible is real, it's authoritative, it has answers for us. Let's take some time to communicate with our kids, and communicate involves listening as well as sharing. And let's start pulling down those emotional walls. Let's find out the needs that are being met through Wicca, that with that young son or that young daughter that's getting involved. Let's trust the fact that we have a God who is all-powerful, who has already defeated the enemy. Satan is mortally wounded. He's going down for the count. But let's reclaim our children, and let's live lives of truth, not of hypocrisy.
Well, but Steve, how, you know, can the average child really combat the influence he's going to get in the public schools? Because the purpose of most public schools is to destroy the faith of that child. And once, of course, you can destroy the faith of the child, it's not that they believe in nothing. They'll believe in anything, and it's because they'll believe in anything, of course, that they'll latch on to Wicca. How can, you know, the parent possibly combat the influence of public education, which is certainly, they won't even allow the possibility to be mentioned that there is an intelligent design? And any time you have, you know, conservatives take over a school board, if they try to bring in, you know, any mention of intelligent design, they'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get rid of that school board, because they are totally dedicated to controlling the minds of our children. How can the parent deal with that? They send that child into a public school like sending a soldier into battle with no training at all and no armor and no weapon.
Dr. Stan, you just hit it right on the head there. We've got to equip our kids, but that means we've got to be equipped ourselves. And, you know, again, I come back to communication and hypocrisy. Don't live a hypocritical life. And communicate with that son or daughter. Talk to them about what's going on, what they're learning in the school. Get active. Find out what books they're having to read, what assignments they're having to do. Help them unpack them. Help them compare what's going on in that classroom to what the Bible teaches. Help them to have that biblical discernment that is going to be with them 24/7. When you as a parent can't be with them, the Spirit of God will remind them what they have learned, what they have studied, what they've memorized and meditated on from the Word of God.
I'm into that. Well, Steve Russo, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure, and God bless you. I hope you have a safe trip to India.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always good to be with you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Steve Russo, and I think that his work is very, very good. He's off to India. And isn't it interesting? He can go into the classrooms in India and profess the gospel. You can go to classrooms in Russia today and profess the gospel, but you can't do that here in the United States. Why do you think that is? Why, it is very simply because there is an organized effort to destroy the faith of our people. The people on the other side know exactly what they're doing. and there is a conspiracy against God. And when you understand that, then you can understand why they want to take the Christ out of Christmas, God out of our schools, prayer out of our schools, Ten Commandments out of our courthouses, why the movies are as vile as they are, why, of course, movies that will get the Golden Globe Award with no redeeming social significance. In fact, pushing depravity and, certainly everything bad. And till you understand that, nothing's going to make sense. Once you understand it, everything going on makes sense. And so our plea to you is, understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And if you'd like to get more detail, please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Pull down our newsletters and read them now. We've put many of the newsletters into little pamphlets, so you'll have one subject, whether it be the occult hierarchy, whether it be what happened on 9-1-1, whether it be the history of money, whether it be genetic engineering and the creating new diseases, or whether it be the fact that the United States is not a democracy. How can you certainly discuss the fact we're not a democracy? Where's the documentation? We're not a democracy. Everybody knows we're a democracy, and that's absolutely right. Everybody has been convinced of a lie. But a lie is still a lie, and if you read the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the constitutions of all 50 states, you'll never once see the word democracy used other than to decry it and say the last thing we want in America is democracy. We're a republic, and you should know the difference between them. And go to our website at radioliberty.com. Get our material there, or if you want to get our pamphlets, call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we want you to tell other people about our programs. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet. And, of course, if you are on Telstar 5, you're going to get us nine hours a day on Telstar 5. We have a message. We want to get it out. We want you to help us educate others. We want you to learn how to defend your faith. We want you to understand that we are involved in this spiritual battle, and there are powerful forces on the other side that are aligned against America, because they know if they can destroy the religious faith of our people, they can destroy this nation. And they are using the military and financial power of this nation to create a world government and to create a new world religion. And they're buying the support of ministers all across America with a faith-based initiative. Ministers are now will no longer speak out. They're buying their support with 501c3 takes tax status. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.